This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and it is Tuesday at a beautiful day.
I think your microphone may be turned around the wrong direction.
It's your show now.
Yeah. Hang on. Hello? No. That's weird.
Huh. Technical glitch.
How about the mayor? Can we hear you?
I don't know.
Step up to the mic.
I'm there.
Uh-oh. Your microphones are turned around backward. I got new microphone holders for the mics, and they just clip that together, pinch it together, and rotate the mic around. No, yeah, there you go. And talk into the mic now.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks.
Go.
How about that? Hey, we're nothing but trained professionals here. We know how to use these things. All right. Hey, welcome, everyone. This is the place to be at your noon hour to talk about local initiatives, ideas, institutions, and individuals. We talk about Marion and Polk County with a heavy emphasis on, of course, the city of Salem and Kaiser. And it's Tuesday, and it's a beautiful day to live in the Mid-Willamette Valley. We're getting a little bit of that liquid sunshine that my trees really need.
And my grass.
I planted like 11 trees.
You did?
I'm green, right?
Wow.
And I want to reduce my carbon footprint.
That's impressive.
So I planted this whole row of trees that are going to grow to be 40 to 60 feet tall, and they're supposed to grow 2 to 5 feet a year.
Whoa, what'd you plant?
Yeah, they are called, I'll think of it here in a second, Leland Cypress. Leland cypress trees. So, anyway, completely beside the point, except that they're taking and they need some water and going healthy into the fall and into the winter. It's going to be this mountain of green on my property, and it's going to be awesome. And it's going to suck up the carbon that I breathe out, and you know.
Sure.
So wow. I'm more green than I was a year ago. Hey, welcome to the studio, Mayor Chuck Bennett.
I want to talk about Chuck and my trees today.
Yeah, I am fabulous.
See, I really am interested in horticulture. I don't know whatever you're doing here.
Yeah, arborvita.
Arborvita is a plant, right?
It is, and that's often used as a screen. I opted for something that was taller because of the elevation change in the property.
Yeah. Sure.
So it's going to provide a wind break. It's going to provide a noise break because we're not very far off of major street with traffic and a visibility, of course, privacy break.
Great.
So this is just going to be,
congratulations. This is really pretty exciting stuff.
Most importantly, though, I'm sequestering and pulling carbon out of the
atmosphere. You're doing it. That's great.
All right, John. Mayor, it's nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you.
We had your library department head on the show yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, did a very nice job.
Oh,
we learned a lot about the library.
She's got a lot going on. And she's got a full plate.
Seemed like it was a good hire. She's only been with the city a little over a year.
Yeah, she's really outstanding. Well, she's leading the effort to seismically upgrade the city library, which means you have to leave the existing library over at City Hall Complex. They had to find another place to put the library, then move all the books, the stuff inside the library to the new location, and then do the work inside. And she's overseeing that. I think she's doing a very good job. She, you know, there are always glitches in those kinds of activities, but I think she's really done an excellent job and weathered it well.
It's one of the things that happens in our society right now is we think everything should go smoothly all the time.
It doesn't.
And then something doesn't go smoothly, it'll be a construction project, it'll be a new law, it'll be, you know.
Putting in new microphones.
Microphones, right? And it's just like, people, just calm down, it'll work out.
Yeah.
And America, we seem so quick to condemn.
Well, and we're so...
That didn't happen right.
One thing I notice is we're so quick to get excited about it.
Sure.
And that it's sort of, you know, all these things become like the most important issue in Salem or in the state or whatever. And they're not. They're not. They're just, you're working your way through issues through problems. And most of them will be there next week, next month, next year, and you just keep working on them.
Well, I know she doesn't work for you because only the city manager
works
for you. So, but Sarah Strahl is her name, and the city librarian. And I was laughing with her after the show because she has all this expertise in, you know, library,
yeah,
professional library stuff and programs. And this, and now she's going to have on her resume this huge construction project,
yeah,
and the whole infrastructure change and the move. And, you know, that's going to be a whole project. And, you know, that she's going to have a much broader set of skills and experience than she had before. All right, let's talk about some city business, shall we?
Sure.
Last night you guys were talking about the so-called sit-lie ordinance.
Right.
let me just say, we've talked about this in the past.
Sure.
And people don't like the name, and even you said it's not really a great name for what the ordinance actually does.
Right.
And it's just it's a sit lie.
It's called a sidewalk behavior ordinance, I think, is the newest euphemism for it. But it regulates the ability to put up a tent and camp on public sidewalks, public right of way, and it also says that during certain hours of the day, you can't lay down on the sidewalk, It's a fairly straightforward.
I was laughing last week. There was an article in the, I believe, in Statesman Journal, and the people that were complaining about it already.
Sure.
That's not even the law yet, but they're complaining about it. And they use these trite old phrases like, you're trying to criminalize being homeless.
No.
You're trying to make all homeless people criminals. And, you know, a bunch of horse manure.
Well, it's absolutely inaccurate. There are no criminal penalties for being homeless. There are no criminal penalties associated with this ordinance. It's a civil violation. It's like littering. But it's the kind of thing that we hear quite a bit about from members of the, particularly the downtown business community, and then just the community in general. And in all honesty, this is not the homeless problem. I mean, people think it's people camping, it's people laying around. That's not what homelessness really looks like in this community. This is a very small slice of the homeless population, which is several thousand people. The things that we hear about, people laying around on downtown streets, setting up tents, I would just guess we're talking about less than substantially less than 100 people. And among that, there is a group of folks that are just pretty severely antisocial. And most folks, homeless or otherwise, if a policeman comes up and says, would you please move along, you know, you're blocking the train here, move along. I mean, most folks are real cooperative. There is a group that just tells the police to buzz off and is resistant to any kind of housing, resistant to any kind of services they usually need because of issues they're facing, whether it's alcohol or drugs or a former felony conviction or whatever it is that has brought them to the condition they're in. And the police need to have a little more leverage with them to encourage them. The penalty for not cooperating with the police under this ordinance is you'll be essentially barred from the downtown area. But this is part of a broader effort.
Yeah. And, you know, what's perturbing is I don't like the shaming. I don't like the, well, we care about these people and you don't care about these people. And they want to pretend like there isn't antisocial behavior, as the mayor's fond of saying, as if, yes, they're not criminalizing being homeless, but that doesn't mean there isn't criminal activity within the ranks of the homeless.
Oh, no, that's a separate issue. That's a very separate issue.
Let's just stay within the realm of reality, people, and then they throw in ridiculous examples and end up in the quotes in the paper like, well, what if somebody's sitting on their suitcase in front of the hotel waiting for their, you know, their ride or da-da-da?
That is so ridiculous.
Okay, you're not doing yourself any favors here.
Right.
What if a child is doing a chalk drawing on the sidewalk? Will the police officer arrest them?
Gosh.
And it's like, wow.
There is a level of silly, and there is
a level
of silly. And frankly, we heard from the police chief last night. What we got was a very clear understanding that our frontline relationships with the homeless are often through police officers who are interacting with them, just doing essentially welfare checks. Are you okay? Do you want to go to a social service agency? Do you need some help?
Right.
This is just part of that continuum. I don't think, I'll be honest with you, after listening last night to counselors talk, I don't think we'll end up passing a sit lie. We'll talk about something else.
Oh, all right. Let's talk about that when we come back in the hour. And also in scouring your agendas, I want to talk about things in city council that are flat out boring. Shall we do that? Let's talk about the boring stuff too. This is Brent D. Hart with Dave Bourne on 1430. KYKN Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We're talking to the mayor of the city of Salem, Chuck Bennett. We were talking about the sit-lie ordinance and moving that along. Said during the break that in its current form, he's not sure it's going to pass. But if you want it to pass, I would tell you to tell your city councilor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's got councilors that are, in my opinion at least, listening to the minority again and trying to represent a minority view as the will of the greater population. And what's missing here, Chuck, is the rights of the people not to be harassed or impeded or obstructed or economic development or economic activity deterred by other individuals.
Well,
I don't care if they're homeless or if they're loiterers, if they're high school ruffians. I don't care who they are. Everybody around, we're a community. We all have rights. So why are we going to throw away the rights, you know, on behalf of not inconveniencing maybe 100 people?
Yeah. Well, I think that's one aspect of it is the larger community and its concerns. But it's also, I think, unfair to the homeless. I think one of the real difficulties with homelessness is getting access to services, understanding how to get to the services like shelter or
warming centers,
recovery. Yep. That relationship, that opportunity to have a police officer who is also well-versed in how to work with folks in these kinds of crisis situations, to lose that relationship, to lose that effort with a group, I think is a terrible mistake. I'll tell you what I think's going to pass. This really is called a sidewalk behavior ordinance. It's because it has broader issues. Sit lie, which is literally what it sounds like, sitting and lying in the sidewalk or in the right of the way, is during the day. During the day, not at night, but during the day, is an issue that I think councilors, some of the council, is very, very nervous about, to have that kind of regulation or that kind of assistance to those people. I don't know why, but they are. Fine with me. But what we've also got are people who are building structures in the right-of-way, whether it's tents or large. I've seen one down by Reed Opera House about a year ago that was almost two stories tall. It was so very complicated with all kinds of things being brought in. That will be that will not be allowed citywide. And I think that's particularly good. We have some large tent encampments that suddenly pop up. And when I say large, it may be 20 tents. It looks huge. Or we have individuals who just suddenly pop up a tent or build a big box. Well, those are no longer allowed under this ordinance. And that, as far as I can tell, will receive a good, strong majority of the city council supporting, and that's citywide. It's so we don't end up with the kind of situation you see in Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, where you've got whole streets given over to tent camps.
So if you are interested in weighing in, you know, find out who your city councilor is and send them an email, or you can send an email to citycouncil@cityofsalem.net, and all of them will get your opinion on the matter. You've got a new councilor, Vanessa Nordyke, in Ward 7. She's new at this, and maybe she doesn't have a lot of input, except a few people have bent her ear. And you have, of course, a councilor, Kaiser, from Ward 1, who represents a lot of downtown. And she really needs to hear from people who are impacted by this. I remember, Chuck, I don't want to take too much of your time, but my brother visited, and this was years ago. Uh-huh. And we went to a movie downtown. It was probably the holidays, and we walked. We were early. We walked, you know, six blocks, which is a pretty good portion of downtown,
yeah,
right? And we're walking all, and we felt 100% safe. And there was, it was clean, and there were no homeless. And it was really something that, as a community, could feel proud of, and really people could really feel as though this was a nice place to be.
Yeah.
And now we're not feeling that way anymore. And if we're not going to have a downtown core where our own citizens feel proud to take a visitor, right, out to dinner, yep, to a movie, to the theater. I mean, frankly, if I owned Enlightened Theatrics or the Grand or the Elsinore or the movie theater, if I owned any of those things, I'd be shouting up and down about having a safe environment. Safe and clean environment, because this is our living room. It's our community's living room. Let's change the subject.
Okay.
Let's talk about some money things, although I promised to talk about boring things.
I thought we were going to talk about the boring stuff. Yeah.
All right. So if you look, folks, like nerds like myself, and you look at the agenda, then you find these nuggets like they needed to make a decision on a possible sign variance at a McDonald's.
What?
So that's really exciting stuff. You know, we talk about city council folks, and we're preaching to you that this is not a partisan, this is not Trump versus Pelosi kind of world. This is not a blue state, red state world. They're talking about what size should your drive-through sign be at one McDonald's on a corner, right?
What?
But, I mean, that's,
let me tell you how this is going to get. This is not. I know how boring this sounds, but I'll tell you what. To the neighbors, it's a big deal. And on this issue, we actually agreed to take a new look at our sign ordinance, so we don't have these come in one at a time. Every McDonald's singly coming in is fixing the sign code, which really was updated a couple of years ago. Actually, probably more than a couple. It feels like a couple of years ago. It's probably 4 or 5. But was really never completed, and this is part of it, is as drive-ins have changed, so has the signage had to change. And it can be controversial. It's quite surprising how suddenly red state, blue state it gets.
Yes.
So
another thing.
And you know that. I mean, you've been down that road.
Oh, that did happen with actually, it was a sign variance for a church. You wanted to put up a reader board.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it
been
was
there.
Like, you know, about a dinner plate size too big. And I've never been more mad at my fellow counselor in particular, but counselors voted against that because one neighbor hated the church, hated the Lord, thought a church would be the worst possible neighbor. One neighbor.
Yeah. Wow.
The neighborhood association, it was the only time this particular counselor, I'm not going to call him out, it was the only time in 4 years that this counselor didn't support the neighborhood association. The neighborhood association said, yes, of course, you know, they were fine with it. One neighbor. And so, and it was preposterous. It became, why are you fighting this?
And it wasn't boring, was it?
Well, it's
it was frustrating.
On the larger scheme of things, when you talk about police and fire and roads, it's a tiny little thing, you know. And the other example I had is, you know, someone's developing some land and then there was a part on your agenda and the city is vacating, in other words, giving up rights to some right of way as the plots get laid out and the infrastructure gets, and it's just functional.
It is
just functional, people. It's not all that exciting. It's not all sexy like homeless people, right?
But I'll tell you though, Brent, and you know this, I think, too, is people expect us to do a good job on kind of the meat and potatoes issues of city. It's planning, it's fire, it's police, it's a library, it's parks. You know what I mean? And that we're on the right course on that. What they don't expect are these kind of issues that pop up, whether it's a third bridge outside of our transportation needs, if it's the homeless population and the seeming inability to agree on some sort of regulation. And what we get are, or if it's giving up and agree or disagree with this stuff, giving up lanes for traffic, for bicycles, things like that, we get real strong, you're on the wrong track readings right now as a result of some of those decisions. And I think a lot of it is where people begin to perceive the council is just not, you know, you're supposed to be serious about your budget, about providing these core services, doing a good job with them. And otherwise, kind of leave me alone. I don't really, not, and I think there's a kind of a transition going on here.
And you do get two to a couple of different flavors of people that serve. Some want to change the world.
Right.
Save the earth, change the world. And others want to just serve their community and don't see that everything's wrong with it, but things could be improved. And
yeah, exactly.
So there's some things coming up, a tourism promotion area, and we'll be talking about that as that moves forward. But that just came on your agenda.
Yeah, it's something we've been working on with the Travel Salem Group and hotel owners. They want to do of their own a voluntary tax on themselves to invest in travel information that goes out to the state and to the world saying, come to Salem, Oregon.
Did
and
you just say tax themselves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
you don't hear that
you know,
very
when
often.
I say tax themselves, you understand who themselves is. Yes. Themselves is the guy staying in their hotel.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Who generally is not from here. It may be your cousin or your parents or your brother-in-law, but that's who they'll tax. And they want to have that. And they're working. They've been working with us, with Marion County, with other communities. But right now they're pretty focused on having Salem approve this. Travel Salem and the hotel owners have a real case to make that the more you focus on information out about our community, the more people come in, whether it's we've got great baseball diamonds for ball games, we've got great rivers for rafting, stuff
kayaking,
like that.
Fishing.
Great hiking, great fishing,
great wine,
great beer, great cider, great food, great, you know.
And believe it or not, you know, not only, of course, there's wine tourists, we know that, but I was always surprised, like when the Oregon Garden went in, there are people that are garden tourists. There are people that are agricultural tourists. There are people that come to visit a region for certain things that we wouldn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Well, art, actually, art and history are
and
big draws.
Historical area, historical downtown, say, and some of the neighborhoods they come and check out.
Yeah.
If they're in the area or they're coming through the area, well, we want to see the historical downtown.
So that's what's going on with that one.
All right.
And that's coming.
We're going to take a break. This is Newsmakers. We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett, and I am Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. Stick with us. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart, and we impressed upon the mayor to stay with us, chat about a couple more things.
Chained him down more
like. You know, we don't want to talk about all what we're nagging about. We did get a groundbreaking ceremony for the Union Gospel Mission.
Yes.
We did get a groundbreaking ceremony the mayor did last month for the apartments at the old McMahon site. So that's pretty exciting. It's always nice. I drove through and saw a crane. But to see a crane in your downtown is a good sign.
That is a good, and it's a big crane. It's pretty cool.
That is good news, and I can't wait for a block away when they're going to build our six-story hotel with a restaurant on top. That I'm sure you could see the river from there. And
nice,
some very cool stuff. All right, a couple of money things. Our listeners like to know what's going on with the money, what they can expect to pay, how things change, why they change, what are the driving forces. So real quickly, we're talking during the break, the garbage rates. I know that has to be approved by the governing authority, be it the county or the city.
Right.
So when they all have territories, which means they have monopolies, but they can't charge whatever they want.
Right. It's
so
a franchise.
So you get to tell them what to charge, right?
Well, within guidelines, I mean, and there's some pretty strict guidelines in terms of what the on what a franchisee is allowed to charge for a certain return on investment. And we keep it generally below a 10% return, although I think it can go as high as 12 if I recall correctly. Frankly, and this is terribly frustrating to even talk about, the city has very, very little control over the cost of solid waste disposal. We don't control oil costs. We don't control tire costs, health insurance, wages, or the big one, the tipping fee, which is what's charged for the garbage haulers to get rid of the garbage, whether it's at a landfill or at a burner like up in Brooks at Covanta. And we have both available here in Salem. Polk County side goes down to Coffin Butte near Corvallis. The Marion County side goes up to Covanta. We have almost no control over that in terms of its price. So the result really is, ultimately, you end up, you have a study done of the request from the haulers and a determination of all of the cost factors and what a fair amount is that actually keeps them picking up garbage. And that's what's approved, and that's what was approved. It's a fairly small increase, but the problem is it's a fairly small increase every year. So one of the things I'm talking with the council about in advance of our goal setting for the year is that we get more involved in waste disposal. Take a real close look at what should we be looking at in those issues. And there may be nothing we can do, but we engage about once every 2 years when they bring us the ordinance to change the number.
That happens every 2 years?
I think it's every 2 years, yeah.
And
sometimes quicker.
Yeah, and depending on what the legislature does to them in terms of the employers and mandates.
Yeah, they got hit with the whatever that employer tax was. Yeah, this is one that is really frustrating, where you don't have any control at all. It's not our budget. It's not policies we have. We don't even require people to have garbage pickup. We can work with folks. One of the suggestions was from one of the counselors, well, what if we had you come pick up yard debris every other week? Well, it doesn't make much difference. The truck's there. So it really doesn't reflect big savings, but that's the kind of thing that I think we need to understand and talk about. Council, I think, particularly as you get new counselors that have not been through this, have a real problem with this question. We had a question about why don't we do a market system, and I referred to it as the New Jersey Sopranos model, which is...
wow.
which I'm sure the counselor appreciated, but it is, though, a competitive system, and you'd suddenly have trucks all over your neighborhood picking this guy takes from Republic, this one from another one, this one from another one. And what we've got now are areas that are handled by each hauler, and it's a fairly efficient system. It's just, you know, we're reasonably expensive. But the other thing, and I think it's really important, and you've seen this, I think, Brent, over the years, the public has felt that the garbage service in this town is one of the best services the community provides, are these excellent garbage services. What has gone wrong is recycling has just stopped being part of the money-making cycle. It's become a cost to get rid of recycled product rather than an income source, and that's been a tremendous change.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Well, that was a long answer.
That's a boring issue, but boy, you can tell I get excited about it.
Now, you know, some cities do require that you have garbage service.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have a rental, even if your unit is vacant, they will require to have garbage service.
Oh, yeah.
So at all times.
We haven't done that yet.
If it's a rental property, at all times, either the renter has it or the landlord has it, but you can't not have it.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess that's a way of smoothing out revenue. I don't know. Or making sure that things don't back up when
I think more than anything, it's so they don't back up. You do get some problems when it backs up.
All right. We're talking a little bit earlier in the program about the payroll tax. It had a second reading. That's going to go to the voters, right? That's still moving forward.
Yes.
But going to the voters.
Yes, it's going to the voters. Right now, I think what's being worked on is the explanatory statement. What's it for? The council, I believe, agreed that if the public agrees to have this tax collected from paychecks for income earned inside the city, the money would go to public safety. And one of the questions is what's that mean? You know, what is public safety?
How do you silo the funds?
Yeah, how do you keep it tied up? And so there needs to be a real serious discussion of that. And, you know, I get email from folks out here in Kaiser and other parts of the community, the general community, who come into Salem to work asking, why do I have to pay a tax to Salem and not get to vote? There's a lot of frustration in the surrounding communities about that. We have 60,000 people drive into Salem to work every day. And I think one of the arguments is, excuse me, you have a heart attack in Salem. It's our fire department that we have to keep at the ready who comes to save your life. If there is a crime, if there's traffic problems, it's our police department. Oh, by the way, you're driving on our streets. And there's a sense of if you're using the city, what amounts to almost a half day each day. Each year, you pretty much ought to be you don't pay property taxes to support these services. This would be small price to pay to have these kinds of services readily available. That's the argument. I'm not going to, but I can tell you, I've asked about people from out of town getting to vote, and the answer was that'd be a negatory on that one.
Yeah, I can see their point. They're going to scream taxation without representation, but you know, it won't be the only example. I mean, how many times have you traveled to a foreign country and they charge you to get there, but you don't get to vote there?
Right.
Or I don't know. I'm sure there's more examples, but. Yeah, if you have a privilege of coming through Salem and being in Salem and working in Salem, then these are the rules in Salem. So that'd be interesting.
Well, it's to help support services we all use. That's right. The concept.
Right. And, all right, so that's going to be interesting. We're going to let you go.
There's
so many other things to talk about in the future. We'll come back and get a little bit. Maybe we'll invite Travel Salem in here and talk about the promotional.
Great idea. Angie from Travel Salem is superb.
But we appreciate you being here and clarifying some of these things that the typical voter and some of our listeners are not aware of.
Yeah, and so I hope people now appreciate just how city government isn't boring. It's just
from garbage rates to McDonald's signs to right-of-way easements.
It's just one exciting moment after another.
I'm going to recommend you get a raise. Thank you to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're going to finish up our hour right after this on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. There's so many things we're not even going to get to this hour to talk about happening in our community. We had the Crystal Apple Awards last week. The Crystal Apple Awards, if you're not familiar, it's handled by SCAF, Salem Kaiser Education Foundation. It was originally started by the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce as a business community thank you and reward and sign of support to the education community. Frankly, I liked that a lot better. It just felt a lot better and more prestigious than just having the education community pat themselves on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I just made them mad, but that's how I feel about it. I thought it was really more meaningful that people who are outside of education said, hey, education, we really value you. And the chamber is still a partner in putting the thing together. And it's great to honor excellence and going above and beyond in education. Frankly, they need it. I did have one little issue, though.
Oh, boy. Here it comes.
If you look at the list of awardees, and they awarded 12, right? The only 12 people in the district received a Crystal Apple.
Okay.
Only half were teachers.
Who were the other half?
There was a bus driver. There were administrators, kind of, a counselor, administrators, all important things in education.
The support system.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Well,
right?
Why wouldn't they get the award? Kids look up to them, too.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I think it's really important that they exist. However, if I'm going to give the award, I'm going to tend towards the people who are actually doing the educating, right? The district is full of these fabulous people, and they might be counselors, and they might be bus drivers, and they might be special ed people, or they might be working at the district offices or something. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of an interesting ratio that only half of them were people who were educating our children.
Sounds like they were trying to be all-inclusive.
Yes, a little too hard.
A little too hard.
A little too hard.
All right.
I know. It was like bus driver sounds like an awesome person. Great to have him in the community. But is he doing the educating? I don't know. Maybe I'm just being picky, right?
Teaching the kids safety in transportation.
Anyway, it's a great event. It's really a great event. If you've never gone, try to go next year. It's always in mid-November. And it's important that we uplift the people that do go above and beyond. If you've had kids in your schools, you know that there are employees there who clock in and clock out. And you know there are employees there who are amazing, that this is their life and their passion, and they do so much for the kids and the family and the community. So it's nice to elevate them once a year with the Crystal Apple Awards. And I'm glad that the chamber is still involved in there. Also, you'll be happy to know, Dave Bourne, that you can buy your flavored marijuana now again to vape with, because
what?
That was overturned by the judge because they had a ban on these flavored marijuana products for having to do with the vaping products, right, and how people were getting sick, injured, dying, and the governor actually banned the sale of them, but a judge overturned that.
Didn't realize there was flavored marijuana.
Oh, yeah, products, yes. THC.
Oh, the oil products.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
That's different.
Things that you can vape.
Gotcha.
Most importantly in the news is an effort to get redistricting out of the state legislators' hands. And there's a whole crop of news articles now. They're not hard to find. Which I'm supportive of. We talked about this about a year ago with Kevin Mannix, who has been all throughout the political sphere in the state. And Kevin Mannix had his own initiative, and apparently these two were coming parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't talked to Kevin Mannix about it, but I believe that he's withdrawn his petition, and there is a petition moving forward to utilize it's going to be partisan, as one person described it to me, it's going to be political but nonpartisan. So the question is, do you want your legislator to pick which voters are in their district, or do you want the voters to pick who they want representing them? That's the juxtaposition, right? We're going to talk about this. We did book a guest, so we're right after the holidays. We're going to have a representative of the League of Oregon, the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We'll have a couple of segments and talk about the initiative, why it exists, why we should do it. But frankly, I love the coalition because the coalition is full of right and left people.
Well, good.
So it's kind of nice not to have something that's partisan shoved down our throat for a change. And that sometimes it takes the people to do something that is good for the people without thinking in terms of, well, this is only good for Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And this is only good for Republicans. League of Women Voters is heavy behind the bill. Common Cause for Oregon, Osberg, Independent Party of Oregon, Oregon Progressive Party, the Farm Bureau, the Taxpayer Association are some of the organizations that are supporting this. So, yeah, we're going to be talking about that, and it's going to be in our ballot next year. Boy, that's huge news. If that could pass, I would restore my faith in Oregon voters, maybe.
What?
Because, wow. This is going to take power away from the Democrats because right. currently they're in control. Right, so this would take power away from them to draw their own boundaries so that they could manipulate and stay in control.
Gotcha.
Right, so if we get a relatively blue state, and a pretty darn blue state, to vote for, hey, let's not make it partisan, that's a win for statesmanship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and lastly, just a couple of minutes. This is one of those things we hear the term whistleblower a lot, and there was a lawsuit filed against the state for wrongful termination, back pay, and what have you from a whistleblower. And it's disturbing. This is the Oregon Office of Emergency Management. And she claimed, her name is Lori Hollian. Hollian. I hope I pronounced. Sorry, Lori, if I pronounced
it.
Maybe it's Holy. Holy and anyway, she sued the state agency saying that there was sex discrimination and she was retaliated against for raising concerns about malfeasance at the agency. Huh. So here's the thing about it. And she got like a $300,000 settlement plus back pay and plus lawyer fees, etc. The state says there should not be construed that we admit any proof of liability or fault. And here's the thing, though. And I don't know about this thing intimately. Except that there were audits done and there was misspent funds found. So.
And nobody got in trouble.
Yeah, probably nobody lost the job, but Lori, right?
That's kind of messed up.
So she reports this mm-hmm. and she says, hey, I think there's, one, I'm being mistreated, especially after I've blown the whistle. And I mean, this day and age, how many movies are there about, you know, the whistleblower? How many situations are you? How many times do you have to pay out? You can't behave this way. I don't know. There's got to be another way. Like, let's get rid of them. All right. Federal auditors. We're talking about the Office of Emergency Management, which includes, you know, our relationship with the National Guard. And,
right.
Right. $2.3 million in misspent or overspent federal money in a two-year period, 2010 to 2012.
Ouch.
$2.3 million. Does that sound like she was right?
Yes.
Sounds like she was right. Then.
And then it sounds like they swept it under the rug.
Then they did another audit, and the agency officials were accused by her as manipulating the product, and the feds rejected the report that the department sent in. They rejected it. It's not. And then, additionally, 2016, it was a Marion County jury awarded almost $1 million to Martin Plotner. And he was the director of the Office of Emergency Management, who also claimed that he was fired for blowing the whistle on mismanagement.
Wow.
Okay, what's going on here, folks?
Right?
This is your government. This is your government in emergency management. And you have people getting fired for blowing the whistle and then being proven right that you are mismanaging our taxpayer funds. That is a problem. Federal government even demanded $3 million back for that they spent. All right, we got to go. That's our show. But finish up the hour getting all fired up. Thanks for being here on Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morin. Let's do it again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.